All right, we're looking for a fascinating program for you tonight as we go live soon to KFYI Phoenix, where Linda Moulton Howe is there attending the International UFO Congress with some incredible guests. Let me tell you something. Around this planet, there are more and more UFO reports from serious people, pilots, police officers, security people, folks just at home. They're all seeing strange anomalies. Military people who've been reporting over the years of these craft. Something's going on. Well, maybe we'll get to some of this today on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. A month ago, when Linda Moulton Howe was on with her series of reports, she was telling me that she was going to the International UFO Congress in Phoenix. And I said, Linda, we've got to have your report live for us there. So we made arrangements with our incredible affiliate there, KFYI. Linda is there with a number of guests. So let us, through the magic of radio, go straight to the studios of KFI. And there is Linda Moulton Howe out there. Hey, Linda, how are you?
Well, George, I'm telling you, this has been so far a wonderful conference. And I have with me three of the favorite people that I have probably in the world when it comes to people I've known for a long time and that I think that they have extraordinary information to share with our Coast audience, starting with Stanton Friedman, the first half hour, Jim Mars, the second half hour, and amazing information coming from Travis Walton in the third and the fourth hours. And I am holding in my hand right now one of the formal invitations to speak at the 2011 Annual Global Competitiveness Forum in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, held a month ago on January 22nd to 25th. The invitation is from the governor and chairman for the board of directors of the Saudi Arabian General Investment Authority. It is addressed to, quote, Professor Stanton Friedman.
He's the best. He's the best.
And the invitation lists confirmed 2011 speakers that begins on the right side in color in this invitation. The Right Honorable Tony Blair, former Prime Minister of the UK, Eric Schmidt, Chairman and CEO of Google, unquote. And later on, former U.S. President Bill Clinton confirmed to be a keynote speaker. The invitation states, quote, this year the theme is innovation, and within that theme we are planning to host a session on the subject of extraterrestrial life, close quote. I'm reading that in this invitation that has Arabic also in the invitation addressed to Stanton Friedman. Now, Stanton, as most Coast listeners know, is a longtime civilian investigator of the Roswell, New Mexico UFO crash of July 1947, and he's author of Crash at Corona, Top Secret Magic, and Flying Saucers and Science, and he has co-authored with Kathleen Marden, Captured the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, and the new 2010 release called Science Was Wrong. All of these books are available at www.stantonfriedman.com. Well, Stanton was invited to be on a panel with a member of the Muslim Council in Riyadh, along with astronomer Jacques Vallée, quantum physicist Michio Kaku, and Nick Pope, former manager of the UFO desk in the UK's Ministry of Defense.
What a heavy group of folks, Linda, huh?
That's right. And listen to these titles. The panel's original title was, quote, Innovation and UFOs. The acronym was in the title. Now, later on, for reasons that neither Nick Pope nor Stanton Friedman understand, that title was changed to, quote, Contact, Learning from Outer Space, close quote. Stanton Friedman and I, as you said, we are speakers here at the Fountain Hills, Arizona Open Minds UFO Congress, and he joins me live now tonight in the KFYI Phoenix Radio Studios, and I welcome you, Stan, to Coast AM.
Delighted to be on again.
There you go, our buddy. How you doing, Stan?
It's been a long day, George.
You know what? You've had more energy than most 20-year-olds. Linda, Stan and I met back in 1971. He was my very first radio interview in Detroit. He was attending a college lecture, And I wanted to go cover him, and my news director said, no, go cover this murder. And I went, nope, I'm going out there, and risked my job to go out there and cover Stan. And it was the greatest move I ever made. But go ahead, Linda, take it away.
Thank you, George. And let's hope your adrenaline is running, Stan. And
I hope so.
We will have a very interesting coast tonight. And strangely, there were headlines on the internet that former President Bill Clinton was speaking at a UFO conference in Saudi Arabia. Stan, what really happened?
That's not one of the things that happened. It was a big conference. So over the 3 days, there were perhaps 1,000 people there, not all at once, out talking to their buddies, I guess. A high-level group of people. I mean, managers, big shots. The fee to attend the conference was $4,000 if you signed up early, $5,000 if you signed up late. So they kept out the riffraff, if you will. It was, I didn't even know anything about this organization when I first heard from them. I went to the internet to try to find out, were they real? Was somebody trying to spoof me, you know?
And this was the seventh year, and I think most of us had never heard of this before those headlines that said Bill Clinton was attending a UFO conference, and people went, what?
Yeah, I would think it would be made up.
And it was the fact that you all were over there on this panel to discuss UFOs in front of these movers and shakers around the world. And on that day, what I'm curious, what was that audience like? What did it look like? What were the numbers? Who was there? And what did each of you try to communicate? And what kind of feedback did you get?
Well, there were a few hundred people there, and the audience was in a typical Saudi Arabian way. There was a section for the women down off to the left with a semi-transparent wall. It reminded me of an Orthodox synagogue with the women separate from the men. You know, there were some women in the other part of the hall, too. But we were sitting on a big stage. It was nicely produced, a big screen on either end, a big screen with music and stuff in the middle. And we would go up to a microphone if we were using slides, you know, PowerPoint. I'm stuck on slides, but anyway, I used PowerPoint. Otherwise, we'd sit in these rather comfortable chairs on this big stage, and they were translating simultaneously into Arabic or the other way around. And it was 75 minutes. I mean, we flew thousands of miles. It's a long way to Riyadh. To be there, and it was just a 75-minute panel.
For each of you or the entire panel?
Total panel was scheduled for 75 minutes.
Well, who was asking the questions, and what did you think was perhaps the most interesting question from the point of view of what is it that these global leaders, including people, even if they were not in the audience reflects that Blair, Clinton, Google, all of these people were basically world leaders. So
yes.
What happened in terms of what did you say to them, and then what kind of questions did you get?
There was a moderator, and we each did a small thing, less than 10 minutes. So 5 times 10, that's 50. That leaves us 25 minutes. A little chatter back and forth, some questions that the moderator posed, and we were finished. It didn't take very long. Now, we each had a quite different viewpoint. We started with the Arabic scholar who referred to the Quran and sort of reluctantly admitted that there was nothing in there that says there can't be aliens, but it's too far to come here.
Well, I'm telling you, I did some research because we were going to be talking about this, and one of the things that really surprises me is that when you go, whether it's Wikipedia or history, you are finding that the Quran is filled with references to what are called the jinns, J-I-N-N-S.
Yes.
And then when you do further research on what the jinns are, you come up with these kinds of translations from the Arabic. The jinns are, quote, to hide, to be hidden, even to be hidden inside of the womb, and that the English word genie comes from jinn. And then when you read on further, what were these jinns, or what are they described as today? Arabic folklore and Islamic teachings, including the Quran, talk about the jinns as occupying a parallel world to that of mankind, that they are normally invisible to human retinas, but they are shapeshifters, and they can be good, evil, or neutrally benevolent, which is odd. What would provoke the three? But mentioned frequently in the Quran, the jinns are described variously as those that have wings and fly in the air like dragons, those that resemble snakes and dogs, and yet another description is tall men in white clothes. Now,
none of this is really relevant to what we were talking about, although I found, not surprisingly, Jews and Arabs are both Semites. And, you know, two Jews, three opinions. It looks like two Arabs, three opinions. We heard a lot of different conflicting notions about what the Quran says. Everybody refers to the Quran, but you'd think they were talking about three different books. So some people referred to the Quran. Others were rather careful to avoid saying that anybody was coming here. You know, it could be an American conference with a debunker around hither and yon. But we each took a different viewpoint. It was a sort of unusual mix of people.
Right. Well, Jacques has always said we're dealing with things from other dimensions. Well, you've talked about hard craft.
Yeah. Jacques was focused on, remember, he's an investment counselor. He's
today.
Yeah,
he comes from being an astronomer who did one of the most important books, Anatomy of a Phenomenon.
He talked about his newest book, which has 500 pre-1879 cases, which couldn't have been airplanes, helicopters, etc. And he made a point that there is robust evidence for further investigation. We need to be looking more at what was going on around the world. And the book has stuff from China and all over the world. Now, I was the only one who came on, let's say, strongly.
Your first sentence.
Earth is being visited by intelligently controlled extraterrestrial spacecraft. We're dealing with a cosmic Watergate. We want to learn about innovative approaches to technological problems. The best way to do that is to look at those areas where these problems have been solved. The aliens are coming here. They're flying around the atmosphere. I didn't put any ifs, ands, and buts in there. It's Foursquare. I showed, I'm sure some people were surprised. I showed a nuclear rocket engine and spread my arms, said it was 7 feet in diameter. It had twice the power of Grand Coulee Dam. I'm sure that shook a few people up. I also showed a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier and casually mentioned that, you know, it epitomizes the situation of an interstellar craft and a little Earth excursion module. And I showed the picture of the nuclear carrier, and I said it can operate for 18 years without refueling. This came as a revelation, I'm sure. I also showed a couple of CIA blacked-out documents. You could read eight words each, but when I talked about Cosmic Watergate. And so I tried to focus on my mantra, which I stated in the first part, namely that technological progress comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. The future is not an extrapolation of the past, whether you're talking about world problems, economic, technical, or whatever, or how to get here from out there kind of thing.
And if all of the work that you, I, Jim, Travis, and others have done, the bottom line is that the U.S. government, at least working with the U.K. government, has back-engineered non-human, some kind of advanced technologies that might serve as an answer to propulsion and energy systems now, and yet they still...
I didn't say that.
But I'm saying it, and that we're in a time of oil crisis, and if we've got that kind of a breakthrough... Where is it, and why isn't it being brought forth now?
I haven't said that we have that kind of breakthrough, and I'm not sure we do. Developing a big propulsion system is a very different problem from providing power for the world. And yes, you can produce nuclear power, but what we want is innovation in our approach to the problem. And also, and this came up in discussions with people afterward, the whole view of where we sit in the universe is changing, because what we have done is gone away from the Copernican view. Remember, Copernicus upset a few people. The book was banned for 300 years. When he said, Well, you know, folks, the earth isn't the center of the universe. The sun is. Oh, no, 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 no. We, the church, are at the center of the universe. Well, now, with all these new exoplanets and all
54
this
54
kind of
that are Goldilocks and could have perhaps life.
That's well, just the start.
We probably have billions of planets in this solar system.
Yes.
In this Milky Way galaxy.
Yeah, now we're talking.
George, that was that latest science review that if you extrapolated from what they have found so far, the 54 Goldilocks and one, I think it's 1,256 others, that you come up with 50 billion planets in the Milky Way galaxy alone.
Yeah, let's say it's only 500 million. Only 500 million. Frank Drake talks about 10,000 places where there might be life sending radio signals. Why anybody would be using technology appropriate to us, we've only had radio for 110 years or so. I have no idea, you know.
Did any of the Saudis ask you all or come up to you after and say, look, we maybe shouldn't talk about this, but this is what I've seen. This is what's happened to me.
Not really, although my initial invitation and a side comment the man made was that he'd had an experience himself.
Really?
Why were the Saudis even interested in this topic, Stan?
Well, you know, we're throwing darts at a dartboard here with different views on it. My feeling at the time, my first reaction when I got the invitation, after establishing that there was such a
that it was real,
was the way I felt when I first heard about the Pope saying that, you know, there's no problem with the alien life. Maybe God made us, he made them, brethren in outer space. And my first reaction to that was, what does he know that we don't know? Is he trying to convince the world's Catholics, 1.1 billion or so, for something that's going to happen? And that was my thinking here, was here we have the world's leaders and shakers, movers and shakers. Are they aware of something going to happen this world that will turn the world upside down in our view toward technology, energy? On the other hand, I must say, especially with the timing of the crisis in Egypt right after that, after I came back, one of the things that impressed me was, first of all, that the Saudis are very much concerned about education. They're spending 25% of their budget on education, which is a lot. They're educating their women, which is unusual for that part of the world. There were women speakers there, presenters there. And the feeling I got, it's a feeling, nobody sent me a sworn statement like this. They're trying to avoid what happened in Egypt, where the birth rate has gone up, the number of population's gone up, the opportunities have gone down, poverty has increased, and you get a revolution at some point. That's happening as we speak in other places.
And Stan, didn't Bill Clinton himself in his keynote talk about the exoplanet discovery? And you were sitting there, I'm sure, and he made some point about if.
Yeah. Bill gave a very good speech. I'm sure he got paid. We panelists didn't get paid, for anybody who's wondering.
He was the entire budget, Stan.
Well, could be. Maybe Tony Blair got a piece of that action, too. I don't know.
We've got about 45 seconds, folks.
Okay. Well, he did refer to recent scientific developments, including the discovery of a perhaps Earth-like planet near a nearby star, and think what impact that would have.
And said that.
Yeah.
Clinton said that. And I understand from Nick that he felt that the fact that Clinton had said that, there really was a repercussion to the general world news media that Clinton even referenced the exoplanets. And what would the implications be if we find life on one?
Yeah, that was certainly part of the overall picture here. They covered an awful lot of ground at this conference. I had a lot of people come up to me saying that they were surprised that this panel was being held, but they found it very challenging and interesting, and I've already been invited back for next year.
Oh, super. Fantastic.
Linda, we're going to be back with you in just a moment with your next guest, Jim Marr. Stan Friedman, thanks so much, and good luck at the International UFO Congress. They shall enjoy your presentation. We'll be back. Well, for just 25 cents a day, you can become a Coast Insider, formerly Streamlink. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and sign up for it and take a look at all the little benefits you get at about 25 cents a day. I think it's a little less than that, as a matter of fact. Well, as long as we don't have any X flares, technology is wonderful. Watch this. We flip a switch, and there we are live back at KFYI in Phoenix with Linda. Hey, Linda.
You know, when we took off from Albuquerque to get here, the pilot came on and said that NOAA was reporting that the entire globe was engulfed in radiation or solar flare radiation, and that it was affecting everything, including the Wi-Fi in the airliners. And that was, So if this keeps building up, I myself have always, I've told you this, I've said that on Coast, 2012 could be the time that if we get a coronal mass ejection that blasts from the sun and hits directly face on to some section of the earth where there are important satellites, and we lose a lot, that would be a kind of catastrophe without annihilation on the earth.
I was talking to Whitley this week, Linda. He was one of my guests, and I told him, I says, Whitley, you remember years ago, I have been saying that I think the 2012 Mayan date has to do with some kind of solar event, something of some kind of magnitude. And he said, you know what? I didn't believe you, but I do now. Yeah. And even he has changed about this.
Well, and the DOD is warning this could be a major impact on this entire planet. They put out a big press release just a few days ago. And along these lines of, what is it that is happening in the skies, in the water, that our government may or may not have knowledge about? But one of the mysteries that is still percolating, it happened around 5:15 p.m. on November 8th, 2010. And that was when a KCBS-TV news helicopter from Los Angeles videotaped a large projectile launch that the Navy and other military agencies said was unknown to them. Some speculated it might be a Chinese show of force of their missile technology off the American West Coast, and later efforts to explain the phenomenon as an airliner taking off were ridiculed. And with me tonight, from live from Phoenix KFYI station, is Jim Mars, who has been following this mystery since the news broke. Jim is author of Crossfire, An Alien Agenda, Rule by Secrecy, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and his latest 2010 book is The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy. I recommend all of these to all Coast listeners. And all Jim's books are available at www.jimmars.com. And Jim, I'm so glad you're with us
tonight.
Is he
wearing his hat, Linda?
No. He took it off because we're all in earphones. Otherwise, he couldn't hear you.
He never takes it off.
No photographs. No photographs.
There he is.
We did take some photographs,
How
actually.
How are you, Jimmy? Everything good?
George, it's always a pleasure to be with you. Yes, she had someone taking photographs, and I'm really afraid now I'm going to be getting a blackmail note.
Well, you folks both sound great, and Stanton did too, because, you know, I always get to hear most of you on the phone. Every once in a while we'll meet in person, but hearing you in a different studio, you both sound great.
Well, good, and we have something I think really important to communicate, and we're going to start off, as Jim and I have discussed, that ABC News, the very next day on November 9th, reported that this is a quote, the Federal Aviation Administration said it did not approve any commercial launches around the Los Angeles area on Monday, November 8th. To add to the mystery of what's on the videotape, the FAA said a radar replay of a large area west of Los Angeles did not reveal any fast-moving unidentified targets in that area. There was nothing that would have fit that on radar. The FAA also said it did not receive any reports of any unusual sightings from pilots who were flying in the area on Monday afternoon, November 8th. And Jim, you have been putting together kind of a timeline that starts from around that 5:15, from people who have worked in missiles all the way through. Why don't you just start and lay out what you have found?
Well, to begin with, I got a call from an old high school friend of mine that was a missile launch officer in North Dakota, and he had heard the news reports where they were trying to say that this was just a misidentified airplane contrail, and he said, I can't believe that. He said, I saw those videos. He said, that was a missile launch. And then to add some cachet to that, was retired Air Force Brigadier General Jim Cash, former Assistant Director of NORAD, with considerable experience in missile launches. And let me just tell you what he said. In my opinion, there's absolutely no doubt that what was captured on video off the coast of California was a missile launch, was clearly observed by NORAD, assessed by a four-star general in minutes, and passed to the president immediately. Now, the question that still must be answered is why NORAD's muted response was simply that North America was not threatened, and later our government approved the lame excuse that the picture recorded was simply an aircraft leaving a contrail. This decision was made far above the four-star level, and because the system in place demands it, was made by the president himself.
And, Jim, what is so odd, Hillary Clinton was on CNN, I believe, for a very brief clip somewhere between November 8th and November 9th, and she said, I think this could possibly be a show of force by China. Now, where was Barack Obama on November 8th and 9th?
He was in Asia in preparation for the G20 meeting over there, which many pundits were saying he was trying to urge the Asian nations, particularly China, to continue to accept U.S. dollars as trade currency, and please don't downgrade us our rating. It also could have been in retaliation for exercises conducted in late August, joint exercises between the U.S. Navy and South Korea in the South China Sea, where they were firing off missiles and generally putting on a show of force. And one of the ideas seems to be that, okay, we were flexing our military muscles and that China came over and retaliated. Now, it's interesting that Hillary Clinton said it could have been a Chinese missile because, according to a report on CNN.com, the Russian Federal Space Agency stated, and this sounds pretty detailed, that an Akron 1 military satellite on November the 8th had detected the signature of a YJ-62 subsonic anti-ship missile fired from a Chinese People Liberation Navy type 041 Yan-class submarine known to be patrolling approximately 30 miles off the California coast.
And for that kind of detail to come from Russia, to me, I read that in between the lines. Russia was going to make sure that the United States was not going to get away with somebody saying this was an airliner taking off from Los Angeles.
Exactly. And the Russian report went on to say that this was a exercise by the Chinese involving a electromagnetic pulse, an EMP pulse. And the object was twofold, to see if this exercise and if this EMP pulse could work in a localized fashion and to judge the response time by the U.S. Navy.
And at 6 o'clock, right?
Right.
Which would be about 45 minutes later after the missile is videotaped.
And could have been explained by the time zone change.
Right.
About an hour later, or at the same time, in a time zone.
Because it's out in the Pacific. We're talking about the Catalina Island area was where the missile was videotaped by the CBS.
And about 200 miles on further west, we have the giant cruise ship Carnival Splendor, which went dead in the water. All the engines quit. All the power went off. They were just dead in the water. And in fact, in an interview with USA Today, Clark Dodge, the former chief engineer for the Washington State Ferries, said that an engine room fire and damage to a generator or switchboard should not have shut down other generators and engines. And he said, quote, what happened makes no sense to me. And I've been trying to check on that. And as of this late date, there's still no real definitive answer on what happened to the Carnival Splendor. So that lends a lot of support to what the Russians said about a EMP pulse. Now, the second part of the test was see the response time of the U.S. Military.
Which is not very favorable.
Not very favorable because it took the aircraft carrier Ronald Reagan and the Coast Guard 11 hours to get to the stricken ship.
It's incredible.
Now, you know, here they are groping us at the airport in the name of security, and it appears that a foreign nation launched a missile 30 miles off our coast and had 11 hours to get away.
Yeah. Now, that was November 8th. November 9th, we have CBS and ABC reporting that the FAA is saying there's absolutely no radar signature of anything that would match what was on videotape. That is what makes this such a strong case. This was videotape.
Yes.
And we've all seen that videotape.
Right. And if you've seen the earlier versions, the first versions of the videotape, before they edited some and only showed just a smoky trail, you can see a cylindrical object with flame coming out the bottom.
That's right. And that smoke is brown. It is dirty. What happens if we are launching a missile?
The rocket fuel that we use, both in military missiles and at Cape Canaveral, just think, people think about what you've seen. Big, billowing, white clouds of smoke. This dirty brown exhaust tells me and tells many other experts that this was not a United States missile.
Right. So now we've got, George, what looks like beginning to be physical evidence that we have had a launch from something that even Hillary Clinton implied while Barack Obama was in Asia, that this could be China doing a show of force off the California coast. And I ask, if Jim would go to a remote viewer and just see for interest without having any other knowledge, what would a remote viewer say about that November 8th, somewhere 5 to 5:15 p.m. near Catalina Island? And Jim, what did you do and what did you find?
Okay, well, I went to what I consider one of the best sources, which is a former Army training officer for their remote viewing grill flame unit, Lynn Buchanan, who now heads Problems, Solutions, Innovations in Alamogordo, New Mexico. And, of course, I didn't want to front-load him. I didn't want to ask him what it was. I sent him a eight-digit number, eight digits, and it represented, my question was, what happened off the coast of California on November the 8th?
So, George, Lynn did not even have the question in any kind of English text.
Okay. That's okay. Right. He had eight digits, and he came back, and he, very succinct little report, he said this was definitely a missile fired from a submarine, and it was fired as part of a test of a system under development, and one of the objects, he said, was to see if it could be tracked by radar, which it could not. In fact, he referred to it, quote, as a stealth missile.
Jeez.
And that it was powered long enough to reach speed and trajectory and then coast silently undetected to its target, undetected to radar or any other means. No anti-missile defense protection against this. He also got the impression that the firing may have been off schedule, but the test was successful.
But Lynn could not remote view, and no one to date, as we're speaking after or the 24th to the 25th of 2011, the source. There's been the speculation that it may have been China, but is it not fair to say that even the remote viewer did not get what was the exact source of this launch, where everybody is agreeing we've got some kind of a foreign missile?
Well, you know, I only sent him the coordinates for my question of what happened. If there had been a proper and ongoing remote viewing, of course, a follow-up question would have been, you know, what was the source? So what I'm saying is, no, he did not specify what kind of submarine it was, only that it was a submarine.
And what makes this even more incredible, George, is that 2 months later, and wasn't it January 2nd, Jim, that a second... missile launch.
Yes, this is
that
one
remains a mystery.
Yeah.
In 2 months, George,
yeah.
Had mystery missiles. And Jim, take it away on Padre Island.
Yeah, George, this is one you probably not even heard about. But on January the 2nd, there was a missile seen launching out of the ocean, out of the Gulf of Mexico, off the coast of Texas, off the Padre Island there. And it was captured on videotape and cell phone tapes. And only one station in Corpus Christi actually aired the story and showed several different views of this trail going up into the sky. And, of course, wondered what it was. They did this. The TV station did check with military sources in the area. And they said that it was not one of their missiles, but they could offer no explanation. George,
that's
this is
amazing.
I know it. This is pretty incredible to me because whether or not the MP was deployed or whether it was testing, somebody else may have been responsible for whatever was going on. it makes me wonder, is there some sort of clandestine war going on? And is the corporate mass media unaware or unable to report truthfully on this? Because to me, trying to sell the public on the idea that a missile launch off the coast was merely an airplane contrail, that'd be kind of like describing Hitler's attack on Poland starting World War II as, oh, we had a traffic jam on the Polish highways this morning, you know. Frankly, as a lifelong journalist, I'm just appalled at the lack of serious, in-depth investigation and reporting on the part of our so-called news media.
Why the secrecy, Linda and Jim? Why the secrecy?
Well, to underscore what George just said, or what Jim just said, George, is that the ABC and CBS, but especially ABC, is the only one that I know that went into detail about the fact that the FAA had done investigation within 24 hours and that they were confirming that they had no radar signature that would match what was on that videotape. But you did not see that picked up by the, well, I'll call it the cable channels. They were running with the ridiculous misinformation, like the weather balloon in Roswell or swamp gas in Michigan. Now it was that an airliner just caught in the sun at the right angle was the explanation for the video. This time around, what I'm seeing is more and more people are scoffing at these ridiculous explanations that are coming sometimes from authorities. And there's one other very interesting thing.
Well, can I offer George to try to answer your question from my standpoint? It comes down to the fact that the bulk of the U.S. budget each year goes for defense. And if the government has to announce that a missing thing can slip a submarine up to within 30 miles of our coast and launch a missile off, and it takes us 11 hours to get there, and they're not even sure what it was, they can't really admit to that because just think of the billions that they have spent since the 80s on missile defense, Star Wars. And it shows that all that's just wasted effort. I'd also point out that this may go far, this missile launching may go far to explaining why Congress on December the 22nd, 2010, just 2 months later, authorized a $725 billion Defense Department budget for 2011, the largest military budget since World War II. And they must know something. They know something's going on.
And, George, that is now. And I got the most interesting letter from a Coast and Earth Files listener. They did not even give their name. They identified themselves as an Earth Files and Coast to Coast listener. And they apparently, either they know a great deal about this, they may be a helicopter pilot in that area. This is a very long and very detailed typed four-page letter. And I'm only going to quote one section. According to Jane's Navy, China's nuclear subs have a trans-Pacific range and cruising speed of 35 knots and can operate to a depth of 1,400 feet. There is a list of submarine classes in which in 2006, a China submarine surfaced in midst of a flotilla of U.S. Navy ships and within torpedo range of the aircraft carrier USS Kitty Hawk. All of its movements were closely shadowed by U.S. Navy ships and aircraft during the China Sea naval exercises. And in relationship to that event, the People's Republic of China could be termed a, quote, party of interest. And this event that was reported as a mystery plume by all the major media immediately afterwards may be part of what Hillary Clinton hinted, China was doing a show of force. But the fact that, as Jim said, George, if this happened within 30 miles of the California coast and a Chinese craft below water was able to launch such a missile, where are our security?
Hiding, no doubt. Linda, stay with us. Up next, she's got Travis Walton, Fire in the Sky on Coast to Coast AM.